Okay, welcome back, everybody. Welcome to Zone In. I'm your host, Steve Lewis. For the next hour, you will be zoned in for fitness. My guest today, I'm really happy to say, is Dr. Robert Silverstein. He's the author of the book, Maximum Healing. I had a chance to read this book. I'm going to tell you, for people my age, and I'm, in that 50-plus crowd now, this has got to be your Bible. Dr. Silverstein, are you there?
I sure am.
How are you?
Good, good, thanks. Appreciate being here.
I'm glad you joined the show. Really, I tell you, we only got an hour, but I could sit down and talk to you for the next, 20 days, because really, this book hit home about a lot of things. But before we get into the book and start talking about a few other things, why don't you tell us some things about yourself? I mean, how did you get into this? I mean, you were a regular physician, and then all of a sudden now you're this, author with different creative ideas.
Well, I've been in practice a long time, and so there were little tiny steps that happened all along. I'm trained as both an internist and a cardiologist, and I'm board certified in each. And when I left Emory University, I then went into the Air Force up in Massachusetts. And while I was there, I started to run into the natural foods kind of people. And slowly, little things began to gel. Eventually, I came in contact with the people who were raw eaters and then the macrobiotic people. And ideas sort of made sense to me the way it was explained. What's the shape of our teeth and what's the length of our small bowel, and we lack fangs and claws, and then how much exercise, and what are we supposed to be drinking? And all of this is aimed at towards the concept of, why do you have a problem? What is it that you are doing that is making this problem occur? I don't want to sound like I blame the patient, but on the other hand, that sort of turned out to be the, not correct approach, but that's the insight you have to use. What is this particular person doing to make this problem happen? Because I don't believe that people get fractures or have high blood pressure or get stressed or anything else unless they set themselves up not to be able to handle what it is that they're doing. And I've seen it time and time again. People who were not in shape, who had trouble walking, a shortness of breath, people who were anxious, having trouble sleeping, migraine headaches, people who with high cholesterol or diabetes, once they start doing what I call the essential requirements of the human biology, breathe right, drink right, eat right, exercise right, think right, then whatever the issue is sort of begins to melt away. And this gelled over the number of years that I've been in practice. And for whatever reason, the alternative stuff just sort of made sense to me, even though most of my colleagues, 99.9%, don't know a doggone thing about alternative medicine,
okay.
Like using
yes.
magnesium for leg cramps or what vitamins work in what conditions and which ones are wrong. So that's how it happened.
Oh, wow. But you hit on it just, what I was thinking. I mean, this is just so much different than what the average physician, goes through and talks to you about once you go into his office for, different conditions. They really never give you a plan to come out. They just basically, don't get me wrong, I'm not criticizing the community. I mean, really, because we've made great strides, I'm telling you. But the thing is that, with your book and your concepts, this is something that you just don't generally hear about. So it's, it makes you wonder, why isn't everybody doing this? Now, like you said, you've been doing this for a while, so it's all, a matter of, it's just building all this experience. But, it's something that we really need. I mean, I couldn't put the book down. I mean, I don't even look at it as just reading a book. I mean, it's more like a reference now. I mean, especially, I'm looking back at it. I mean, there are a lot of things that I had to learn on my own without my physician telling me these things. But truly remarkable. I'm just amazed. I mean, of all the things that you come up with.
When we talk about where American medicine is, I mean, there's no doubt about it. We've made some incredible strides in how to deal with this, that, and the other, and we keep getting better and better on it, at it. But one of my thought processes is not what is your genetic disorder, but what is it you're doing to anger your genes so that you have the expression of that genetic order. The perfect example of that is people say, well, cancer of the colon runs in my family, or cancer of the breast occurred in my mother, my grandmother, and two aunts. My father had a heart attack, his brother had a heart attack, I've now got an abnormal coronary angiogram. It's traditional current Western medicine asks, not why did you get there or how did you get there, ask what is your problem and here's what we're going to do about it. And it's sort of like you have either a medicine or surgery deficiency for whatever the problem is. But it is difficult to get people to change the things that have created those problems, because everybody sort of knows what to do, and we're just not drawn or supported in that. In fact, an essay that I don't have in my book, but is on my website, and by the way, if you want to go to the website, put my name in Google, H. Robert Silverstein, M.D., and that'll give you a link directly to my website. It's called the Preventive Medicine Center. And on that website, I have an essay called, I Don't Like Brown Rice, Vegetables, and Beans. And that is a true statement. I don't like them. I like chicken, meat, cheese, eggs, ice cream, cakes, cookies, pasta, pastries. I like all the things that are not right for me. We are drawn to what is not right for us, and we are not drawn to what is right for us. I mean, if I said to you, drink water and weak herb tea, where's the fun? What about the Coca-Cola? What about the cider? What about the wine? What about the beer? Look, I'm not arguing. The human biology has certain specific requirements. And in general, most people are simply not drawn to them. And everybody will say, well, I eat brown rice or I eat vegetables. But the fact of the matter is the chicken and the cheese and the meat and the eggs taste better. And,
that's right.
And that's what we have in our brain, what I call repeat reward-seeking chemicals. And those are turned on by the things we're not supposed to do, the same as heroin, cocaine, excess alcohol, cigarettes. Those turn on those receptors in our brain, whereas brown rice, vegetables, beans, fruit, nuts, and seeds don't turn them on. I'm not saying that we can't enjoy them and so on and so on, but you're not going to get the same high that you're going to get from eating a steak or ice cream or french fries or potato chips. So the first thing you have to be aware of is be careful about your judgment. And that's the purpose of the book. In other words, if you think there may be something wrong with your judgment that has created the issue, read this book, Maximum Healing, and it'll get you started. Go to my website. That'll get you started.
But, doctor, I have to ask you, like I said, you know, this is not the normal advice you're going to get from a physician.
It sure
is. Like, when did you start to notice that you had to change your philosophy? Was it because you had patients that...
1980s.
Okay. And how long had you been in practice in? You know, was it several, you know, years that you said, you know what, I got to change
what I'm doing? I've been in practice 10 years then.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Okay. And so at that point, then you realized something's got to change here, and then because you really wanted to help the people that were actually coming into you.
Well, no, I didn't realize something had to change there. I was sort of one of those people, whether you want to call them a zealot, an enthusiast, or a person with insight, I was sort of like in a current. I was inevitably drawn, forced into this by my own understanding of what it was that causes diseases, and I cannot to this day understand why many other doctors are not doing this. There are some who are doing this. There's Dean Ornish out in California. There's the Pritikin group down in Florida. There's people here and there. I heard from some of the drug detail people who came by the office. They told me that there's some people in upstate New York that they knew, and some in Texas that say essentially the exact same thing I do. Oh, there's Neil Barnard in Washington, D.C., Physicians okay. Committee for Responsible Medicine. He's about being vegan, which I don't think is necessary. But on the other hand, I'd say he's right, being 90% right or more. And certainly I can't argue with that approach.
But if you started in the 80s, was there anybody around doing it at that particular time, or
just no? The Pritikin group. They were the only ones.
Okay, all right, okay.
Then Dean Ornish came along.
Okay.
Then that came Neil Barnard at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine.
Okay. Well, this is excellent. I tell you, our listeners, really, you got to pick this up. It gives it, there are some technical terms in there, but I mean, really, everything's pretty well explained. And not so much that, as to, the medical condition, but how and why, what happens, and what you need to do to correct whatever problem that you have. That's just totally, I'm just blown away by this book. It caught me, and I was like, oh, boy. And I'm still trying to reference it for, not only my personal use, but, my family and friends. So it's really, I appreciate your writing this.
Well, it's like any journey. It takes a long time. You just keep working on it, make a few changes here. There are people, I have people who come to me, and they're 95% in this direction in 2 weeks' time. Those are really the Medal of Honor winners. They're few and far between. But on the other hand, the message is to get started with more vegetables and beans and less fish and chicken, and pretty much eliminate red meat and cheese. And I know those taste good, and I know your audience may even be thinking, oh, this is crazy. This is no fun. I have to agree with you, but it's called pay me now or pay me later. You either want your freedom or you don't want your freedom. And that's what this is about. I call what I do abolitionist medicine, like the abolition of slavery. This is about the abolition of medical slavery. In other words, don't make diseases happen. It's no more complex than that.
Wow. Excellent. Well, I tell you, they got to pick the book up. But I do want to talk about one subject in particular that I've been talking on the show for the last few weeks here, and it's this the psychology behind what we're eating, and then how we get into this this mode of constantly either overeating or eating the wrong foods. And you seem to have a real good handle on how all that comes about and how we can stop it, if because as you're saying, we're going to have to change our ways in order to prevent some of these diseases that are out there.
My father said to me about what I had to do. He says, all you have to do is pay your taxes and die, and everything else is what you choose in between. And to the black people in your audience, they'll get a kick out of this. This is an old Southern term. Is all you have to do is stay black and die. In other words, they're sort of the same thing. There are certain realities, and then you better be careful because everything else is what you're going to choose. And the fact of the matter is there are some things that we have to be, but everything else is pretty much what we're going to choose to do. So we can choose things. Now, about overeating and so on, I used the phrase once, and that's what it's mostly about. Repeat reward-seeking chemicals. That's what all addictions are based on. There is a reward system in our brain that we have to be very careful not to fire up too much, because it's like any other monster, it'll take over. And we become easily addicted to cigarettes, alcohol, heroin, cocaine, and the taste of food. And while I wouldn't want to call a steak or french fries or ice cream equivalent to heroin, the mechanism is actually pretty much the same. It is those repeat reward-seeking behaviors. And what you have to do to overcome that, some people just telling them, and they will make the changes. That doesn't happen often. But what you have to do is you have to get people to stand back. And on our website, we have several handouts on meditation. That's really the important part. What do I want to have happen? What is it that I can do to interrupt this cycle? It's just like with smoking. What I tell my patients to do is count 1, I can do this, 2, I can do this, 3, I can do this, right up to 60, I can do this. Well, in 1 minute, the urge to smoke passes. Now, it may come back in 5 minutes, and you may have to do that again, but it won't come back every 5 minutes. So what you'll find out is in one day, by counting up to 60, I can do this, or 60, no smoke, you can cut your smoking in half. And that's an easy way to get started. Doesn't quite work that way with regard to diet. The thing I would like to tell your audience is hunger is your friend. If you're overweight, then being hungry is when you're actually losing the weight. And so the more time you spend hungry, but people say, oh, I get so hungry, I can't stand it. Look, you can stand it. Imagine a boat in a river. Here it comes, and you're looking at it. And in that boat are five of your most favorite foods. I don't care whether they're French fries, hamburgers, pizza, ice cream, fried chicken, baked chicken, macaroni and cheese. I don't care what your five favorite foods are. They're in this boat, and you're standing on this little promontory, and here comes this boat, and you're looking at it. You see that boat. It's just a few feet away from you. And in that boat, it's coming, 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 and you're watching it, and it sort of gets right in front of you, and then it kind of keeps going. You didn't jump in the river. You didn't get cancer. You didn't have a heart attack. You didn't die as it went away from you around the bend. And that's what it takes. It takes the maturity of patience to sit there and watch as you handle this determination, this pattern of yours to eat something that's going to satisfy. And you might say, well, shouldn't I have an apple? No, you shouldn't have an apple. You should stand there and just wait for this to pass, and you will be all right. I'm sure everybody who listens to your program has been in a circumstance where just around noontime they got hungry, but something came up and they couldn't do it. They couldn't go to lunch. They had to stay there and deal with that problem. In 20 minutes, it's gone. And then you didn't have the pizza. You didn't have the chicken breast. You didn't have the ice cream. You didn't have this, that, or the other. And it sort of requires you to become what I call a mature adult. It's no more complex than that. Mature adults can learn to wait.
Right. Right. It, definitely right, because you have a much more mature outlook. I agree. Okay. So, but if you're having trouble already, you know, if you're already in this mode that you've been used to overeating already, I mean, you know, a doctor can prescribe a diet, or a personal trainer can prescribe a diet for you or whatever, and you look at it and you're like, oh, there's no way I can eat this. How do you make that switch from choosing the foods that you know, that you really want to have to choosing the foods that you really need?
That's a very good question. And it starts off very simply. None of this has to be complex. There's an ancient Chinese saying, I've changed it a little bit, but it goes like this. The journey of 1,000 miles begins, continues, and ends with a single step. The most important first step is not to go to the danger zones for you. Don't stop at Dunkin' Donuts. Don't go to the grocery store late at night. And don't buy or bring home what you should not eat. The next thing is to understand that you need to overeat cooked vegetables. Even for breakfast, cook vegetables for breakfast, cook vegetables and vegetable soups. For breakfast, snacks, lunch, snacks, dinner, snacks. You want to dominate your diet with cooked vegetables. All the vegetables except the potato family. No potatoes, no sweet potatoes, no yams, no plants. There are a gazillion tricks. Some people will stop all wheat, and that makes an incredible difference. Some people will stop all sugar, and that'll make an incredible difference. Some people will stop everything that's white. White bread, white toast, white rice, white potatoes. And then the question might come up, well, can I eat brown rice? You want to avoid the carbs if you're interested in controlling weight. And that's why I said cook vegetables and vegetable soups. They're filling. They have just a small number of calories in them. And they're not what you really call a carb. The truth be told, all vegetables are a little bit of a carb, but not enough to make any difference. If you ate only cooked vegetables, only, you'd eventually starve to death. So that's the correct idea, to starve to life. So you have cook vegetables and vegetable soup for breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, snack. And you keep yourself filled up on these low-calorie foods. It is not the same as drinking 10 or 20 glasses of water a day, because it has the littlest bit of calories in it. It keeps your body from going crazy. And then you want the soup to be thick, not like Chinese soups, more like Italian soups, minestrone soups. Thick, heavy, tons of vegetables, but not the pasta, not the rice. And then the ideal protein is one that doesn't raise blood pressure, doesn't raise cholesterol, doesn't contain fat. The ideal protein is beans. Not a lot of them, about 4 to 8 ounces a day. If you're under 5 feet 6 inches, you probably need 4 to 5 ounces of protein a day. If you're above 5 feet 6 inches, you can probably handle six to 8 ounces a day. And if you're above 6 feet 2, then you probably need 10 ounces of protein a day. One of the things I want to talk about is what I call gladiators.
Okay.
Gladiators who were built like our professional wrestlers these days were called barley men. They ate lentil barley soups all day long. They did not eat fish, chicken, meat, cheese, eggs. They ate animal protein 3 times a year the night before they went into the arena. They were 99% vegan vegetarian. And here in my office, I have pictures
Wow.
of two guys who are what are called ultra-marathoners and are vegan vegetarian. They can run 100 miles without stopping. Finally, everybody's going to ask about, well, what about protein? Where am I going to get my protein?
Yeah.
And here's my answer to that. Unless you have a serious delusional psychosis, it's not possible for you to get protein depleted. So if you're eating some fruits and some vegetables and some beans, you got it made. By the way, if you're trying to lose weight, the ideal fruit is not apples, plums, peaches, pears, bananas. It's berries, raspberries, blackberries, lingonberries, blueberries. All the berries are fine. They contain the smallest amount of sugar, and still they're sweet. So at this time of year, probably buy the frozen berries and then let them warm up. Another thing is to avoid very hot and very cold drinks, because that stimulates the circulation and the hunger. So you want to eat things closer to room temperature. And I tell people, eat your cooked vegetables and vegetable soups warm. Not hot, not cold, not cool, just warm. And that doesn't turn on, I use the word circulation, that's wrong. That doesn't turn on the metabolism and the hormones that have to do with hunger.
Now, does that include spicy foods too? You know, with
very
peppers?
Little spicy foods there. They tend to be strong, and anything strong tends to create a craving.
Okay. Okay.
So you can have a little bit of cumin, a little bit of curry, a little bit of cayenne, but when you start telling me, "Boy, I like my stuff hot," well, that's like telling me you like your cigarettes. I'm not going to argue with you. That's what you like. But
right.
That's not what's good for you.
Okay.
There are answers why there is so much diabetes, cancer, heart disease, and so on. And it comes from what we do. And too many spices are part of the problem.
Okay. So what would be the first thing that you'd have to, you know, look, you know, if you're trying to actually, you know, change to what you're suggesting here in the book, you know, which is, eliminate certain foods. And I'm not going to go into what you got in the book and what people are to actually read the book. But what would be one of the first things that you, you know, say, look, this is the first thing you have to do? Like you're saying, this is the first step in that journey.
Well, the first step is not about what foods to recommend. It's about what foods not to recommend. So don't buy or bring home what you shouldn't eat. And in general, stay out of restaurants. The one thing I say, fast food places, the only thing you can get in a restaurant or those fast food places is hurt. Now, that's not 100% true, but it's true enough. Part of that is because we're complicit and we'll get the donut, we'll get the bread of the grinder or the wrap. We'll order the hamburger, we'll order the tuna burger, we'll order the turkey burger, and those are the wrong directions. Once it's about staying out of restaurants and not buying what you shouldn't eat, it is about cooked vegetables and vegetable soups all day long. And those are all the vegetables, which I'm going to quickly run through, all the vegetables except the potato, sweet potato, yam, and plantain family. In other words, eat tons and tons and tons and tons of broccoli, cauliflower, carrots, onions, snow peas, mushrooms, green beans, kale, collard greens, carrot and beet tops, mustard and turnip greens, leek, scallion, summer squash, winter squash, burdock, daikon, cucumbers. Those vegetables ideally cooked soft and warm. I also am into recommending green smoothies. I have a Nutribullet on my desk because it's great for demonstrations. And that's not the magic bullet. It's not the Nutribullet. I have no economic association with Magic Bullet, the manufacturer. I recommend Vitamix. I recommend whatever works in your hand. But the green drink should be made towards room temperature. And can contain all the green leafy vegetables. Around here, we have a package, organic, triple-washed, what's called Olivia's Spring Mix. I don't know if you have that out where you are. You can buy it at Walmart here. You can buy it in all the grocery stores. And it's a whole bunch of green leafy vegetables already in a big plastic container that's washed, organic, ready to go. You put that in. You put in half of a cucumber, one carrot, about a silver dollar-sized piece of ginger, half of a lime, and fill it up with the Olivia's Spring Mix or any other green leafy vegetables, bok choy, Napa cabbage, red and green leafy lettuce, cilantro, parsley, spinach. All those are fine.
Okay.
And put those in your food processor, grind them up, no ice, and you can put some blueberries in. I recommend about 4 ounces of pomegranate juice, ideally organic. But I have a bottle of Palm Wonderful sitting on my desk. That's that funny-looking figure of eight bottle.
Oh, yeah. I like
4 ounces. Yeah, 4 ounces of that, 4 ounces of warm water, plus all your vegetables, and make a smoothie, and enjoy yourself.
Okay. Now, is there any particular, because, you know, we've all been taught we got to, you know, count some calories or do some points with, you know, Weight Watchers. Is there any particular you know, calorie limit that we're looking at, or are we just keep eating these vegetables all day? I mean, how do
I have to be a little bit careful here, but in my practice, what I do is I put people on a 700-calorie diet. Most people think they're going to lose weight on 1,200 or 1,500 calories, and they're not. Now, if you combine that with tons of exercise, my 5-foot-2-inch secretary has lost 22 pounds. She's on a little bit higher animal protein diet than I recommend, but she works out over an hour a day, 6 days a week, and let me tell you, she's doing boot camp. She's lost about 20 pounds. Do you know how hard it is to lose 20 pounds when you're 5 feet, 2 inches tall?
Yes, so, you're right.
So she's literally working her butt off, and at the same time, she is limiting her calories, and I have to admit, I'm the first to admit, animal protein is more filling, it's more enjoyable, it's easier to prepare, and in a very real sense, I don't care how you lose the weight, get the weight off. I do say that the red meat diets have been proven, the high-protein diets have been proven to raise cholesterol and cause other kinds of changes that biochemically I don't think are ideal, but if you can transition after you've lost the weight and you're down where you belong and you have a stable exercise pattern 6 days a week like she's doing, then you can start switching over to the quinoa, barley, millet, brown rice, more vegetables, and then the lentils, red beans, navy beans, black-eyed peas, split peas, chickpeas, and then a small amount of fruit, especially the berries, a limited amount of almonds, pecans, or walnuts, and pumpkin seeds and poppy seeds a little bit. But you have to watch that you don't buy those with the salt. And you need good-tasting condiments like vinegar. I recommend a specific vinegar, which is available around here. The name of it is Finney, F-I-N-I. That's a wonderful vinegar. F-I-N-I, Finney vinegar. It's about a $12 or $15 bottle of vinegar that only has about 10 ounces in it. That'll make any vegetables taste terrific. And again, people have a real taste for salt. Salt tends to cause excess thickness of the heart muscle, osteoporosis, high blood pressure, and which means stroke and heart failure. So I really recommend very low sodium diet. And so that's what I'm telling you, with the garlic, the cilantro, some raisins, some walnuts, the finny vinegar. That's how you give things a very decent taste.
Excellent. Okay. You know what? We're coming up on our break here. And when we come back, I want to talk some more to the doctor about, you know, what maybe go into some specific areas of his book about some of the things that he thinks we need to change. But this is great. Okay, so we're going to take a break, and we'll be back shortly. Hi, this is Steve Lewis for Zone In, and I'm back, and our guest today is Dr. Robert Silverstein, and we've been talking about his philosophy and one of the, some of the things that he went through to write the book, Maximum Healing. Doctor, before we left the break, you were giving us a breakdown on, you know, some of the things that we need to do to change, you know, our lifestyle based on, you know, what you've uncovered for the last so many years in your practice. I want to concentrate this next segment basically on some of the specifics of what I found in your book to be, you know, interesting. I mean, not that everything isn't interesting, but everything. But some of the things that I wanted to drill in on, one of the things was this, I believe it's, you have it termed CAIM or CAM, Complementary Alternative Integrative Medicine. You know, can you kind of explain what that is and how you came up with that term?
Well, there is a different phrase out there. And it's called CAM, C-A-M, and that's Complementary and Alternative Medicine. But when you talk to the workers in the field, everybody wants to stick in that word integrative, and nobody else had done that. So that's what I did. Instead of it being Complementary Alternative Medicine, I changed it to CAIM, C-A-I-M, Complementary Alternative Integrative Medicine. And I do think the word integrative is especially important. And what that is about is complementary medicine might be the use of herbs, homeopathics, acupuncture, massage therapy, Reiki, and that could also have a synonym called alternative. Then there was down in Washington, D.C., the federal government funded this large organization that is part of the National Institutes of Health, and it's the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine. So alternative medicine, complementary medicine, really got a start that it's federally funded, that it's in many major universities. It's present at all the hospitals here in Hartford where I am. But they all try to do the same thing, and what they're trying to do is not be separate. They want it to be integrated. Well, that's not what the name said, so I just thought I'd come up with something a little bit clearer. It is not just complementary. It is not just alternative medicine. It is complementary, alternative, and integrative medicine. You might say, okay, what's the big deal? What's integrative? Integrative means putting it together with conventional Western medicine, which is sort of exactly, and again, I'm not bragging, but that's what I do in my office. Sometimes I use vitamins, sometimes I use herbs, sometimes I use supplements, homeopathics. For instance, a person's having trouble sleeping, I like the Highlands Calms Forte or the Rescue Sleep or the Rescue Remedy. Those are excellent products. I have them sitting on my desk as demonstrations, and I have a lot of stuff of like natural food sitting on my desk, a container of miso, some almond yogurt, rice yogurt. I also have a product for arthritis and inflammation called trigosamine. That one's available at Walgreens. I have cans of food by the Eden Company. I have no economic relationship with any of these companies. I just have them sitting. One of the best products I have that, again, is in the integrative direction is a product called Soothanol, S-O-O-T-H-A-N-O-L. very expensive product, but it's great for sore muscles, joints, pain.
Doctor, can you continue to explain something about the alternative medicine that you're subscribing in your book here? I think, you know, what I wanted to make sure was that you weren't going outside of the actual, medical guidelines of, providing basic pharmaceuticals, which, prescribing basic pharmaceuticals, which is what you just said, I believe, was that you still do that, but you also look for, alternative methods as well. Is that correct?
Sure. People who come here may have a high cholesterol, and I try to get them to lose weight, change their diet, move towards the grains, vegetables, and beans, 19 of 21 meals a week. And then they may get their cholesterol down from 230 to 190. 190 may not be good enough. So what I then, and they have a strong family history of heart disease, and they run a little high blood pressure, which is improved but hasn't cleared. Well, that's when I say to them, look, I don't want to leave you unprotected. You've come a great distance, and as soon as you are able to get this down naturally, I'll be glad to take you off the medicine. But right now, we need the Lipitor or the Crestor or the Zocor, or the statin, or we need the Lisinopril, or the any of the conventional Western medicines. So you have to be sophisticated in which ones, and you have to know which ones you can put them on and take them off and how to do that. And that, by the way, is done very slowly, cautiously. And then I have patients get their own blood pressure cup. I like the Omron wrist blood pressure cup. And then we do lab tests for their cholesterol and so on and so on. So, again, as soon as things improve, then I start removing them from the conventional Western medicines. One of the things I say is, this is a little quote somewhere, all the drugs I prescribe are poison, including vitamins, minerals, herbs, and supplements. Be well, use as few as possible. That does not mean there isn't a time and a place for everything, including vitamins, but it does mean try to use as few as possible. Be as well as possible naturally.
Okay, all right. I like that philosophy, really. I mean, because I'm one of those, I definitely like the taking supplements and whatever else I can find that's going to work so that, a natural alternative to any pharmaceutical. So, yeah, and I've been doing that for several years myself. Excellent. Another question I had here, and, like I said, I don't want to give away the whole book, but now, what do you prescribe as far as cardiovascular training, your exercise routine? Because you've got some ideas on how, what should be done, whether you're either trying to lose weight or just maintain, just general fitness.
Well, my model is what I call the pre-technological tribes. And those are the Kung in Africa, the Pygmy in Africa, the San, all those tribes that we think of as natives. They are my guideline. They don't have any high blood pressure. They don't have any high cholesterol. They don't have any diabetes. They don't have any cancer of the breast, uterus, colon, prostate, etc. And their exercise, they don't lift weights. They don't do push-ups. But they are physically active all day long, grinding their food, carrying water from the river, climbing trees, running after wild animals, plowing fields with old-fashioned plows by hand, no tractors, rarely even any kind of plow. They use tools to just dig up the ground. And there's an old saying, early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. Well, the idea was get up at sunrise and go work your tail off, and then you'll be tired by sunset, and you'll be able to go to bed. Anybody who's having trouble sleeping, and I say this at the 99% level, is probably just not doing enough exercise. I can remember when I was in high school, I wasn't any good, but I played football. And what you do is I'd get up in the morning, have some kind of breakfast, go to practice, come home, have lunch, take a nap, get up in the evening, have some kind of dinner, go back to practice. When I came home, I went to bed. In other words, I was sleeping all the time that I wasn't at practice or eating, and the reason I was so knocked out is because I was doing that much work.
Exactly.
So when you work your tail off, you will sleep. That's medication. And the fact of the matter is, we need to exercise as much as we can. All the different exercise. You are right. There are some programs specifically outlined in the book. But
right.
On my website, I said, put my name in Google. That'll bring you to a link that'll take you to the website. I have a bunch of exercise sheets, exercise handouts that are printable there. And I don't care if you just walk or you walk in short periods and then you lift 5 pounds, you lift 10 pounds. I do like the book called The Power of 10. And what that talks about is weightlifting with not very heavy weights, 10, maybe 15-pound weights. And what it does is it takes like 10 seconds to do half of a repetition. So it takes 10 seconds to go from arms up to arms down at your side and 10 seconds to come back. And you want to use a weight which is generally between 10 and 15 pounds so that you can only do 6 or 7 of those and then you're completely exhausted. That's a very joint protective way of doing exercise. Instead of jerking really heavy weights and possibly throwing your back out in the process. Push-ups are good. I got carpal tunnel. I couldn't do push-ups. So I was taught, well, just do push-ups on your bed by making a clenched fist. Don't put your hand out flat. Make a clenched fist and use those to push off at an angle. And so now I can do push-ups again from that. Push-ups, sit-ups. Famous football player Herschel Walker for Dallas Cowboys. He only did 2 exercises. He played football, but then he did sit-ups and push-ups. He did over 1,000 of each, but those were the only 2 exercises he did. There are plenty of ways to skin the cat. I will say this. I do think that swimming is one of the healthiest exercises. But then I have my patients who are tall, thin, who are the bike riders. Not to scare anybody off that, but I had a patient who got bacteria in his blood because of his prostate. From sitting on the bike as he was riding his bike in a race and so on and so on. So, I mean, I've only had that happen once. But the point being, out of doing something good, bad things can happen.
That's
so swimming, bicycle riding, walking, walking with hand weights, yoga, Pilates, I don't care what you do, just do it. And the correct idea is sort of get to about 45 minutes of exercise where you break a sweat 4 days a week. That's the correct idea. 45 minutes, 4 days a week.
Now, the only thing, I like all that, I just got one question, because you know we are living longer. So, I know that age doesn't always matter because of, you know, your mindset. But let's say, you know, somebody that's in their 80s or late 80s or early 90s, you know, I mean, what... You know, and they're still out there trying, because I know several of them, you know, what do you, you know, they don't want to lift weights because they're, you know, because there's a possibility, like you say, of injury. But what, you know, what would you suggest for them?
Well, if somebody got to that age, I'll bet you they're doing something already. And so I'll bet you that in their sort of everyday life, they're doing just fine. There is chair yoga, gentle yoga. That's very good. Tai Chi is wonderful. It has all kinds of medically beneficial effects. I would say if you're that age, go to a physical therapist, find out if anything is wrong, obviously work on that, and then basically do whatever exercise holds your interest. And if your interest is walking or your interest is swimming or your interest is in going to a gym, do that. I have some people in my 80 years who are in the 80s, and they ski black diamond. Not that I recommend that, but they've been doing that all along. So it's sort of like whatever you're doing. And housework does count, and washing your car does count. So the more different things, if you want to mow your lawn, if you haven't been doing it, then don't start. But on the other hand, everything you do counts. So just stay as active as you can. And try to get in, ideally, an hour a day, 6 days a week, of really pretty good exercise. But whatever you can do, sort of the minimum, turns out to be what I said before, 45 minutes, 4 days a week, where you break a sweat.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. And, yeah, so that pretty much covers everybody. Yeah. I want to go back to one point earlier that I didn't ask you about was in terms of the vegetables, because, you know, now everybody's on this thing with, I should say, we've all been introduced to organic and non-organic, and you kind of touched on that. You know, and the organics now are, you know, much more expensive. I mean, but in your book in particular, you know, you speak about the vegetables and how important they are to keep up your immune system. So is there anything, I mean, do you have to have organic as opposed to non-organic, or, you know, what do you suggest?
Well, let's see, how do I say this? The more things you do right, the better off you are. I bought some raspberries, or maybe they were blueberries, at Walmart.
Okay.
And they were in my refrigerator for 2 weeks, and they were fine when I finally ate them. I have never had blueberries that could last more than a few days in my refrigerator. I wondered what on earth had they done to them. And that's not to blame Walmart, but that was just the example, and that's where I got the stuff. So I would say we don't need those chemicals, and it's probably better to get things organic if you can. I remember somebody wrote some kind of dietary advice, and it was giving plus points and minus points. And you got a plus point if it was organic, and you got a minus point if it wasn't organic. Well, I think that's basically true. You are right. There's a price to everything. So, yes, I would say if you're going to eat fish or chicken, it should be wild-caught fish, free-range chicken, cage-free eggs, or bison. Those are all sort of natural. I believe in as much organic as you can afford. And if you cook food, unless you freeze it, use it up in 3 days' time. And those are sort of the general principles. The concept of ideally organic is, I think, a best guess that is correct.
Okay. Now, and you trust pretty much that, you know, our Food and Drug Administration basically has got this organic down, that they can tell that, you know, it's, you know, that we're really getting what we need, or do you think,
well,
you know, growing your own?
I want to encourage people not to be too digital or black and white or rule-oriented. Yeah, ultimately, you pays your money and you takes your chances. If something
All right.
is organic, I think it's better than something that isn't marked organic. Is it always what you and I think of as organic? Probably not. I think if something is raised in a field that hasn't had pesticides or whatever for 3 years, you can then call it organic. That strikes me as ridiculous, but on the other hand, that's better than somebody who had pesticides and chemicals on it last year. So I'm not saying what I said is true, but it's sort of like that. Maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's 7 years, maybe it's 10 years, but and there probably even are some chemicals which are permitted, and still it's called organic. I think organic is a good idea, a better idea than not organic, but you sort of have to put it all together and accept with humility that you may not absolutely know, and it may not be absolutely what you think it is.
Okay, and that's kind of what I was thinking. Okay, excellent. All right, Doctor, I think that's about all our time for today. I want to thank you for actually, you know, sharing this wealth of knowledge. And like I said, and really, I'm appreciative of you writing that book. It's like I said, right now I'm using it like a reference manual for several things. But I want to give you a plug here before we get out. I mean, so now can you give me the name of that website again?
All right, first of all, the book is Maximum Healing, and it is available on the website, which is, put my name in Google, H. Robert Silverstein, M.D. That will take you directly to the website. The actual name of the website is www. And I'll spell it out and then pronounce it, T-H-E, the PMC, Preventive Medicine Center, .org, thepmc.org.
Excellent. Okay, thank you. All right.
Well, all right, you're a good host. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. That pretty much wraps it up for today. Again, I want to thank Dr. Silverstein for going over the book Maximum Healing with us. And you've just been zoned in for fitness. I will see you all back here next week. Thank you very much.
session. When you miss a club.